We have spoken in the past on this show about vertical gardens. They're endlessly popular, and it's a very nice thing, particularly when you're in a busy urban space, to see that patch of green creeping up the side of the building or kind of changing a development and giving it a different flavour. But what role does gravity play in plant physiology? And how can we harness it? How can we use it to best effect when it comes to those vertical spaces? I'm joined now by Dr. Peter Weston, who's Senior Principal Research Scientist at the Royal Botanic Gardens, Sydney, and David Duncan, who's a landscape architect with Aspect Studios. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Good morning.
So, David Duncan, how can we harness or utilise gravity in garden design?
Well, I guess what we're doing is we're not actually using the plant's response to gravity, but we're actually making plants, or designing with plants to defy gravity and also to embrace gravity. So with vertical gardens or living walls or green facades, there's a number of different, terminologies for vertical gardens that do different things. Principally, we're using vines these days. We're using epiphytic plants and plants that can be grown attached to the side of a living wall. And we're using cascading plants that drop over, down towards the ground. So we've got a few different plant physiologies that we're using.
I like it, David. You've got the ambition of a landscape architect. You're wanting to defy gravity as well as use it. That's perfect. So that points to a huge kind of palette that you work with when you're in this space. Does this suggest that we're getting better at green wall design in its different forms?
That is an interesting question, because I think what we're actually doing is we're digging up the experiences from the past. So, for instance, on the One Central Park project at Broadway,
that's one of the biggest such developments in Australia, and you're involved with it. Talk through exactly the parameters of that project to our listeners.
Well, what we had to do that, we were as a joint venture with another landscape architecture office called Oculus, but that took a lot of planning, and it took a fair degree of risk that was taken on by Fraser's Property, the developers of that project. But it was the planning that needed to be absolutely spot on. I mean, growing plants on a vertical surface 30 stories up on top of a building requires a fair degree of homework. So, look, we need
gravity is not your only problem there, surely.
No, absolutely not. So, But look, wind is actually a big issue, and of course also the aspect, the buildings or the two towers have got four different aspects each with incredibly different microclimates, ranging from no sun and windy to scorching westerly sun and windy, and then the more benign facades of the north and the east, which are probably the easiest areas to grow plants. But look, with the planning, we needed a lot of different species. So because of all those various constraints, we needed a palette of 100 plants alone for the cascade and vines, and Patrick Blanc's living walls used an even greater diversity. So there was that. We needed diversity. We also needed to see how the plants would cope with the wind. We subjected various plants to destructive testing, which is a bit cruel, with plants actually in a wind tunnel to determine that. So it was a very rigorous process. It had to be. It was high risk.
David, it sounds rigorous, but it also sounds like you enjoyed putting on a hat and becoming a mad scientist for the purpose of it. Let's get what is hopefully a sane scientist into the conversation.
Yes,
Peter Weston, what role does gravity play in plant biology?
Well, I'm an evolutionary biologist, so one of my main interests is how green plants invaded the land about 500 million years ago, and then gradually invaded all sorts of, every niche on land almost, by adapting to the dry land. So, of course, plants aren't designed at all. They're adapted. And, you know, the very first plants that invaded the land were probably pretty much just sheets of green tissue that covered the ground. And so you can't get more vertically challenged than that as a plant. And ever since, you know, that time, over the last 500 million years, there have been various adaptations that have allowed plants to get less vertically challenged. And now, you know, so now we have, for example, you know, mountain ashes in Victoria growing to almost 100 metres tall. And they've done that, you know, by not inventing ways of doing it, but yeah, adapting to it as a result of natural selection.
So let's take that evolutionary question then. Are there certain species that give us a hint to the role gravity plays for plants that have evolved in particular ways?
Yeah, well, actually, plants that are you know, that are close to David's heart are climbers, and interestingly, you know, they're relying generally on other plants to give them support. So, you know, their stems are not generally adapted to standing on you know, on their own. They're adapted to hitchhiking on other plants. And in order to do that, though, they have to twist and turn. They really do twist a lot. And their stem anatomy is generally adapted you know, for that function. So they have generally wedges of soft tissue between the bits of hard wood that allow them to squash and turn around without, you know, with maximum flexibility. On the other hand, you know, you look at, say, redwoods and mountain ash trees, which are huge, they just have whopping great big trunks that are the result of an adaptation that evolved 300 or 400 million years ago.
And extraordinary root systems.
Yeah, root systems as well, tap root systems that go right down and stabilize them. And you know, different variations in the way wood grows in response to you know, stresses and strains that are imposed on them by the elements.
Okay then, Peter, then you've heard David's scientific tests to try and work out what's going to work at altitude or what's going to work vertically. Based on what the evolutionary process tells you, what kinds of plants would you be recommending? What's best suited for using in vertical spaces?
There's a heck of a lot, but I guess climbing plants of the kind that David uses a lot of are terrific. And we were just talking before we went on air about epiphytic plants, which are, you know, they're adapted to living high up on other surfaces. Like,
obviously,
you know,
I know what epiphytic plants are, but let's assume some of our listeners don't. Do you want to explain it for them?
So, you know, a lot of orchids, perhaps most orchids, are epiphytic plants. So they live on tree trunks and branches, and they're air plants. And so they have root systems that are adapted to absorbing the maximum amount of water from the air and from the surfaces of tree trunks as you know, rainwater is running down them. And you know, they tend to be very conservative in their use of water as well. So they have all sorts of ways of storing loads of water as well as collecting it in the first place.
The use of water is a significant kind of consideration in this area because it's not just about aesthetics. There are kind of all kinds of innovative ideas that come out of the use of vertical plants. David Duncan, what are some of the ones you've seen that particularly tickle your fancy as a designer?
Well, I guess, yes, the major challenge of growing plants on a vertical surface is supplying that water. So it needs to be quite a sophisticated system, depending on the scale, of course, of the building or wall that you're dealing with. The larger the building, funnily enough, the trickier the system. So look at fairly large pumps that can pump water up to the top for it then to gravity feed back down again. Like, for instance, many of the systems on larger buildings these days pretty much use a hydroponic soil mix, very small soil volumes because the architects don't like big fat planters, which is probably reasonable. So a mineral-based hydroponic soil. And then With the actual fertilising of that, basically it's what they call fertigation, which is a liquid fertiliser that's just pumped into the irrigation system twice a year. And even insecticides, if there's an insect attack, they can use a systematic insecticide that then is pumped through the irrigation, the plants take it up through their roots. So look, it is quite high tech.
I can see why, as a landscape architect, it is an appealing area to work in. Lots of room to play and lots of ways to develop. Thank you both so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Peter Weston is Senior Principal Research Scientist at the Royal Botanic Gardens, Sydney, and David Duncan is Senior Associate at Aspect Studios. You're listening to Blueprint for Living here on RN. I'm Michael Williams.